Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel Perek Memvov. We're really at the towards the end now, as we move now towards the Memches, which is the last Perek of Yechezkel. In this Perek, the 46th chapter, we're going to be dealing with the Karbanos brought by the Nasi. Again, there's this mysterious character who is the Nasi, who seems to be the future Melech HaMashiach, or perhaps he has a role in the Kohuna as well, it seems to be, and we're going to discuss the unique aspects of his Karbanos. We should also make note that the first half of this Perek is still part of the Haftorah for Shabbos HaChodesh, which is the last of the Arba Parashiyot, the four special parashas right around the month of Adar, and we're going to read this just before Rosh Chodesh Nisan for obvious reasons. So let's just take a quick look at the Perek from a bird's eye perspective. First, in the first few psukim, running from Pasuk Aleph to Zayin, we're talking about the opening of the Eastern Gate. It's fascinating. In this section, we're told that Shara Chatzera Penimis Aponeh Kadim, the Eastern Gate of the courtyard, which opens obviously to the east, Yesagur Sheshes Yemei HaMaaseh, for 6 days of the week is going to be closed. Uvayam HaShabbos Yiftach Uvayam HaChodesh Yiposach. So Yiposach, it's going to be opened on the Shabbos and the day of the Chodesh, which refers to Rosh Chodesh. In general, in Tanakh, the word Chodesh itself refers to Rosh Chodesh, the first day of the month. And so the Nasi is going to come through that gate. He's going to come through the eastern gate, and he's going to bring his Ola, his Korbanos over there. The gate won't be closed until the evening of that day. And everybody else will bow down through this gate. So they're sort of looking through the gate and to the Beis HaMikdash. As we know that the Beis HaMikdash over here has three gates, one in the north, one in the south, one in the east. And on the west side, there's no gate, but that's where the temple is. So when you're looking through the eastern gate, you're sort of getting the greatest vista of the Beis HaMikdash. That's where they'll bow down. And the Tanakh tells us the specific korbanos that he would bring. He'd bring six kvasim, six lambs, and an ayal tamim, and a pure ram on the Rosh Chodesh. And it describes the mincha, and the oil offering, the meal and oil offering that he would bring a korban. It is interesting that in this section over here, just a few things to think about, is that we were told beforehand, a couple of prakim back, that there was this eastern gate which is always going to be closed. So that actually refers to, as Rashi points out, to a side gate. Remember, there was the large, we'll call it ceremonial gate, and there was the small gate on the side which is called the pishpesh. The one pishpesh, the one side entrance, would be perpetually closed because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina entered through that one and is going to sort of remain shut. But we're talking about over here the ceremonial gate which would be open every Shabbos. Why is it only open on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh? So the Mitzvot points out that because people would not generally come during the week, they would come on Shabbos or at a time when it was a day off. So Shabbos or Rosh Chodesh, which were typically days off of work. Because of that, that's why it would not be open. It would be open when there was this time. In fact, what the Radak points out is that this is an innovation which is only in the future. He says, Gamzel yechidush la'asid, the Radak l'shitaso, according to his general approach over here, that there are many things which are going to change in the future. Not that Yechezkel is making the changes, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make these changes. In fact, Rav Weitzman on his book on the Haftarah points out that there's a great symbolism over here, that when do we open up the bridge between the holiest place on earth and the mundane world? When do we open up that gate that the world can see in? Is on days like Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, where our very mundane activities, our eating, our sleeping, our everything that goes into our physical life, is elevated to a loftier plane on those days. So that's sort of the portal of access of place is open at the portal of access of time, where time can be sanctified, where our lives can be sanctified. That's why it's Shabbos, that's why it's Rosh Chodesh. Rav Kook has a beautiful ma'amar where he talks about how bowing is an example of where we lower our chomrios, our material part of our being, to demonstrate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that really that's the elevated spirit that really is what generates, what energizes and invigorates us. So this moment where there's this joining, this outpouring of energy from the space of holiness into this time of holiness where the whole world can be sanctified, we bow and prostrate ourselves as a symbol of recognizing that. So that's in terms of the bowing over here. It is interesting that you'll notice that the korbanos that he brings on Shabbos, as described here in Yechezkel, the beginning of Memvav, are actually quite different to the ones brought as described in the Torah in Parshas Pinchas. Here it describes two kavasim, but it doesn't describe the rest of the karbanos. So what happened to them? So again, we have the general different opinions. The Radak says yes, it will be different in the future. Whereas Rashi tries to put the two together, he says no. Of course, there are two kavasim on Shabbos. If you look at the description of a Yama Shabbos, Shnei kavasim and Shana Tamimim, there happens to also be Elim, rare rams. But what the Tanakh might be emphasizing over here is that they're not Leikuva. That means to say that you could bring these two lambs alone, even without the rams, and they would be sufficient. So that's why Tanakh is emphasizing it, not to say there's a change, but to perhaps underscore the difference. Then the next step over here in the Perek moves from Pasuk Ches to Pasuk Yod Aleph. And in this section, it talks about how there are different times where people could visit the base of Mikdash. When they would come in, the people will always come in on the Moadim, on the festivals, and they would come up. They would enter from the north gate and go to the south gate, or vice versa. They would never go back into the same entrance they came. They would make a full traverse, and they wouldn't enter through the east gate. Why so? So Rashi points out is because it should be appearing yafe. They should Yisra'u betoch azara yafe. Hashem wants us to appear in front of Him. And when He wants us to appear, it shouldn't just be nominal. It shouldn't just be that we, stick our heads in and rush back to our business. Hashem wants us to be there, so He wants us to traverse the whole space and inner context of the Beis HaMikdash. The next brief section runs from Yud Beis to Tesvav, and it talks about the Nasi's Nadava. If the Nasi decides he wants to give a Korban Nadava, some sort of a donation offering where it's not something which he's chayv to, because of particular actions, so it describes how he'll bring his specific offerings. And there's a unique parsha here that says that describes all the specifics that he might be bringing. And what's unique again about this is that he will open it up through the eastern gate, which means to say that even though regular people, when they need to come to the Beis HaMikdash, will always go from north to south or south to north, those two gates which are parallel to one another, the Nasi, in a certain sense, his being is an experience almost of Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. So when he needs to, and let's say it's a Tuesday afternoon in the middle of the month, he'll open up that gate for the time that he needs to bring his korban and close it right afterwards, because his being there is like the Rosh Chodesh, like the Shabbos of the experience. Finally, we get to the last two sections of Perek, and that is from Tes Zion to Yod Ches, where it talks about the Nasi giving a gift to his children or his servants. And if he wants to give a gift to his sons or his daughters, it will remain for theirs forever, because ultimately he's going to bequeath it to them when he passes from this world. But if it's to his servants, it will only last to the drawer until the 50th year, the Yovel, because ultimately it isn't going to be long lasting, so it has to return to his property. Very fascinating that we need to hear about it over here. And there's a little interesting halachic depth over here. Not for right now, but just to think about why it's necessary to emphasize this right at this point in time. And finally, the last closing section of this parak deals with the storage areas in the Chatzer, and describes how there's lishkos hakodesh, these holy warehouses or storage chambers, which are in the corners of the different courtyards. And it says that there's an area by next to them or by them where you will cook, where the Kohanim will cook their meat. In those areas, so they should not enter into the Chatzer HaChitzona, into the outer courtyard. In fact, the Mishnah in Midos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Hay, tells us that each of these Lishkos, we know that there's two what's called Lishkos HaMea, which are on the western side, and there's two Lishkos HaChamishim, which are on the eastern side of the north-south of the Chatzer HaPinimi. And that we know that the southeast is to be the Lishka for Nazirim. That's where the Nazirs would deal with their karbanos and all their ritual. The northeast one would be for the wood of the Lishka, where the Kohanim or Bali Mumin would try to make sure there was no worms in the wood that would be used for the Ma'arocha, for the firewood on the Mizbeach. The northwest corner would be for the Mitzorayim, and the southwest corner would be for, as Beis Shamnaya explained, would be for storage of wine and oil used for the karbanos. These are specific places that each of these storage houses would be used. And one confusing thing is that if you actually take a look at the Chatzer, as we know, the Beis HaMikdash is two squares. The inner square is the Chatzer HaPnimi, and then there's the Chatzer HaChitzona. What's interesting is that these Lishkas are actually, technically speaking, look like they're in the Chatzer HaChitzona. They look like they're in the outer courtyard. But if you look very carefully, that as we learned at the beginning of Perek Membeis, Pasuk Zion, there's actually a 50 amma parameter, sort of where there's a little wall, a gader, which goes around, is sort of circumscribing these lishkais, that they're technically part of the chatzar apinimi, even though they're outside the gates of the chatzar apinimi. So its square is really a certain sense 50 amas bigger on all sides. So that's why a kohen could leave the gate of the chatzar apinimi, go to one of these lishkais, which is outside, take off his clothes or do the cooking for the meat, whatever it is, and he isn't technically in the chatzar chitzon, or the outside courtyard yet, because this is considered as being circumscribed by this. What we see over here, we see a lot of interesting things. And again, one of the fascinating things is that this new role of the Nasi doesn't seem to just be a political figure. It doesn't just seem to be a person who makes, you know, governmental, societal decisions. He seems to be in charge of a lot of the spiritual welfare of society. He brings korbanos. He has the right to bring korbanos at the right time. He's very much involved in the responsibility of bringing korbanos, which hopefully that extra adds spiritual dimension of responsibility, something which will help him guide the nation in the way that is appropriate. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.